ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, March 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. I guess our second Wednesday, March 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 10 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for our live edition here on Wednesday. If you missed it, I posted last night our Handicapping the Hardwood segment with myself and Kyle Hunter. I was in studio. He called in. We went over nine conference tournaments last night. So we had a lot of things to get to on that show. If you've missed that, make sure you go back and check that out. It was a very, very good recording. We were both very happy with it. So now we've got this live edition here with two guests joining me, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. We're going to break up the college basketball just a little bit, talk a couple of minutes on the Valspar Championship. That's this week's PGA Tour event. Then the second half of today's show, all college basketball with Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. We've got a bunch of conference tournament stuff coming your way today. With Wes, I'll chat Mountain West and Pac-12. With Rolf, I'll talk A-10, SEC, Big West, and then the Ivy League, A-10 and the SEC starting today. Same with the Mountain West and the Pac-12, so hopefully you're getting this one nice and early. Over at BangTheBook.com, lots of great stuff going on. We're going to be posting my MLB season win totals along with some of my other futures stuff in a downloadable PDF guide today. You'll be able to find that over on the homepage at BangTheBook.com. Got to format that here this afternoon, but you'll be able to check that out. All the conference tournament previews up over there as well. NBA, NHL situational betting articles. I'll have NASCAR rolling out here today as well. We've got golf previews. We've got tons of NBA and NHL stuff. I know we've kind of neglected those two markets here with conference tournament time going on. Just the nature of the beast. You know, it's college basketball in demand right now. Nothing against the NBA. Maybe we'll try to do a little bit of NBA stuff next week. But for now, the focus is on college basketball. Check out those free pick contests, free pick videos, sportsbook reviews over there at BangTheBook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Two guests coming your way on the program today. The first, the great Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, good morning, Adam. How are you today?
I'm doing well, buddy. I know this is a very, very busy time of year for you. Thank you so much for joining me. And, you know, I know that we've got some games going on here in a little bit. So try not to keep you too long on today's segment. But let's break up the college basketball a little bit here. Let's talk some Valspar Championship, because this is a very, very strong event at Innisbrook over on the Gulf Coast side of Florida.
Yeah, this has probably been one of the stronger fields that they've had probably in quite a while. I mean, you look and it maybe on the surface wouldn't be considered as top heavy, but you do have, I think, a pretty top field here. I mean, the top player is Jordan Spieth, who's fourth in the world. But, I mean, you have Jordan Spieth, Rory, Sergio Garcia, Henrik Stenson, Justin Rose, Paul Casey, Tiger Woods. A lot of top players, I think, in this field, and some guys kind of in that mid, you know, 30 to 50 range. This is usually an event that I think kind of gets shortchanged a little bit on the Florida swing, because it used to be kind of stuck where Doral was, and then, you know, the South Florida swing, and then stuck in between Bay Hill or stuck in between the Players Championship. So, you know, good field this week, and I think, you know, with Tiger kind of having at least found some competitiveness again and obviously not far from embarrassing himself, you know, that adds some more intrigue to the event.
Yeah, it really does. And before we start to break down some of the players that you've tipped this week and the course itself here, I do want to take a couple of seconds and acknowledge Phil Mickelson with that win at the WGC Mexico last week. I think we talked about it maybe 2 weeks ago that, you know, Phil was finally in a position where his level of playing was equitable to what he was priced out there in the market, because he's a guy who hadn't won in a long time but was still out there in the 20, 25 to 1 type of range. Then he started playing real well. Numbers didn't really adjust a whole lot. It was just great to see Phil get that win. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, I mean, you can say what you want about him. I know that there are some people that don't like him. There are some people that love him. I know he's had a pretty rough go of things here with the insider trading investigation and not winning for a long time, but man, it was good to see Lefty get one last week.
It was, and I mean, he was actually one of the guys I played last week because I thought it set up really well for him. I mean, he had the three good finishes that were top seven finishes going in 3 weeks into it, all places he's won and he's played for a long time. But playing at the Mexico City, I think, was perfect for him because the course is at elevation and allowed him to kind of leave the driver in the bag and hit the three wood, which I think, or the three metal, which I think is his best club off the tee. And so, I mean, when you've got a course that plays at 6,500 yards at sea level, it doesn't take anybody out of the tournament. And I think Phil coming in, you know, you could just kind of feel that he was going to win at some point. And fortunately for me, I was glad it was last week.
Well, I think that's a good segue here into this week. Phil's not playing this week, but this is one of those courses where, you know, you talk about playing at elevation and being able to get a little bit more life with a three wood or maybe a five or something like that off the tee. Here at the Valspar, this is a course where you better be accurate with the driver because these are some pretty narrow fairways. The approach shots are very difficult, lots of hazards around the green. This is a very good test for the players, and I'm actually surprised they don't have a lot of great fields here because this feels to me like as you're leading up to the Masters, if you're playing in Houston, you're playing at Bay Hill, feels to me like this is a good challenge for you, and you can kind of see that with the winning scores that we've had here recently.
Yeah, and I actually like this course. It's an old it's a Packard design. I mean, not a real prominent golf designer, but it's just out just northwest of Tampa in Pinellas County. You know, it's a challenging course. I mean, it's tree lined and a lot of dog legs, and really rewards accuracy here. Greens are kind of medium to fast. It's Bermuda, some tricky greens. I mean, you can. It's a course where you can really score well on the par fives, but the par threes are actually really tough. You get some longer par threes here. Last three holes are actually known as the snake pit, so it's a tough finishing sequence. I mean, you want somebody that hits a lot of greens in regulation, guys who are pretty intelligent with their approach shots, good on Bermuda, and. I guess if I was looking at a correlation angle here, because sometimes we like to look at other courses where guys maybe have had success at other courses that are kind of similar to this. And a little bit, I guess, what we've come up with is Wailea a little bit out in Hawaii where they play the Sony Open, and also Deer Run, which is, of course, the TPC Deer Run where they play the John Deere Classic. So a couple guys I think have shown pretty well at those tournaments.
So one of the things that you do like to do here, and I think this is really interesting with you post over on your Twitter feed, again, that's at Wes Reynolds in the number one, not only do you post the list of guys that you've tipped, but you also post the bet amounts that you've got. Obviously not, you know, talking about, you actually, I should say, you post the unit size that you've got here. And typically what you do like to do is you've got, you know, about a one unit play on those 20 to 25 to one types of guys, half unit then on the 40 guys, and then on down from there. So you've got those listed. And you do have a play for a full unit this week in Justin Rose.
Yeah, I went with the price here. I mean, it was nothing recently that I guess has stood out with Rose, but you got a guy that's a number five player, ranked player in the world, and he was priced at 20-1. And I just think, you're seeing these, you know, you've been seeing some of these guys rank right around him lately in other tournaments like Spieth and such, and they're priced in single digits. But yet Rose is priced at 20-1. He hasn't played a ton this year. Did play in Mexico last week where he was 37th, but had 4 weeks off. And, you know, he's a guy that I think has got a, you know, looking like he's about to start rounding into form. And, it was really, Adam, to me, more of a price play more than, hey, this is my favorite guy this week and this is the guy in a one-and-done that I would tap to win, which I don't think I necessarily would. But I just think Rose is one of the top players that probably gets disrespected a little bit most in the marketplace. I mean, you see, you know, like I was saying with Spieth and Thomas and Dustin Johnson and how low these guys get priced, but yet Justin Rose isn't put in that category, and I think he has – really a lot of the same pedigree.
All right, you got a couple of guys, and I agree with everything you said there about Justin Rose. You got a couple of guys here at 40-1, Webb Simpson and Benny on. What is it now? Are these, you know, price plays as well, or are these guys that you do, you know, see maybe some course form data, some recent form data, something like that?
A little bit of both. I think Webb Simpson has kind of been knocking on the door of a win here lately. He's got two top fives this year, including 2 weeks ago at the Honda. And he's kind of been, I think, knocking on the door of a win. He's got a second place finish here back in 2011. Has some other quality top 10s and top 15s in the past. So went with him, and then also went with Denny on because I kind of looked at the price and thought, well, this guy is, around 86th, anywhere from, I forget the exact ranking, but he's between 85 and 90 in the official world golf ranking. Yet he's one of the maybe top 10 prices here at around 40-1. And I thought, because on the surface that would look a little bit low, when you think about it and you kind of look down into the field. But I think, this is a guy that I thought played really well at the Honda Classic 2 weeks ago, finishing top five. He also has a sixth place finish several weeks ago. So this, he's gotten some decent finishes, I think. He's, fallen a little bit off the radar because at one point he's, a top 40, 50 player. But, I still think he's playing good golf. I think the price being short might be a little bit. Sometimes you do want to look at the market for some tells. And I think he could be a guy that maybe the market's telling you that they're pretty high on. And then a couple other guys I'll mention here just real quick. Bryson DeChambeau is somebody I played at 90-1, and that goes to the correlation with Deer Run, where Bryson DeChambeau got his PGA Tour win last year. So I definitely went with him. Also went with Jamie Lovemark, who was a contender at the Honda Classic 2 weeks ago at 80-1. Past winner Kevin Streelman, I think you're getting a decent price at 55-1. And then really kind of maybe a horse for course type thing, Dominic Boselli, who finished tied for third here last year. He finished two behind Adam Hadwin, who ended up winning here last year. Dominic Boselli is 100-1, and I think, he's a guy, and I think he's kind of a pick that some people are tapping for first round leader. I really don't do a ton with the first round leader market, but that's a guy that you could see, I think, go low pretty early and then really stick around and be a contender for the weekend.
I think it's a strong list there. And I like the point you made about Benny on, and I've talked about that on the show here in the context of other markets, but it also makes sense here in the golf market that, you've got a guy that seems to be priced too low. You look for those context clues out there in the betting market. And if you find some of those, a lot of times, as you mentioned, you can kind of get a little bit of an edge from just being observant pretty much. And obviously that's something you do all the time with the high volume that you've got going on. So good list there. And there are a couple of other thoughts that Wes has over on his Twitter page at Wes Reynolds and the number one. But let's transition over to the college basketball side here, Wes. Two conference tournaments in Las Vegas that I want to touch on with you here today. And one of them starts here at 2:00 Eastern time. So this is a pretty quick turnaround for the show. I apologize to our listeners for that, but just kind of the nature of the beast here at this time of the year with these weekday day games. But in the Mountain West, you've got a team here in Nevada that's a pretty clear favorite, but as we've kind of been talking about a little bit on the show, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Wes, before we start to break down some of these other teams, they don't have a ton of incentive here to go and roll through this conference tournament, especially with some of the injury problems that they've had.
Yeah, they really don't. I mean, they're down to about seven scholarship players now, though. It's seven very good scholarship players who have produced this year, and I think that they've clearly been the best team, and I think, the awards are all and the accolades are all deserved with Eric Musselman and, the Martin brothers and, really how they've done. But I think that loss of Lindsey Drew, that hasn't killed them. But this is a team that doesn't, without Drew, kind of doesn't have a true point guard. So they kind of do it a little bit by committee. And the one thing you worry about maybe going forward with Nevada is their depth a little bit. And they would not be the team I would bet to win this tournament. And I usually go with maybe a little bit of a longer shot, but I personally picked Boise State as the two seed to win this tournament. I think they might be about 7-2, anywhere from 3-1 to 7-2 to win this tournament. I think this is kind of a redemption thing for Boise State. They did lose twice to Nevada, and you know, I think you're going to see it's a veteran team, and I think, you know, when you look at this league, if you look at like some of the profiles when they really break down the teams and whatnot, and they say, hey, this is a team that should be in or a team that should be out. The Mountain West is a league, I think, is a team that does deserve two teams. Whether they get one, two or not begs the question. I mean, it depends on if Nevada wins the tournament. But, you know, my conspiracy theorist hat kind of came on here, and I'm not really much of a conspiracy theorist. But, you know, I'm wondering, you know, sometimes you do wonder with the referees if maybe they don't give Nevada just maybe a couple bad whistles, kind of get them out of the tournament, maybe in the quarters or the semifinals. Because, I mean, you're looking at if Nevada goes out, you're going to get two teams here. And you have a lot of good teams in this conference that maybe right now don't have the distinction for an at-large profile. But, I mean, you look at Boise, you look at San Diego State playing probably their best ball of the year. Fresno State's been very solid. And, I mean, you've got several different teams. You know, UNLV, who was playing fairly solid ball, has kind of fallen off the radar here, and they eventually went down to the eighth seed. And, ironically enough, that puts them in the first game this afternoon, an 11 o'clock start at the Thomas and Mack.
Yeah, and I look at the Mountain West, and, you know, you've got Wyoming, who if they pick up a win here in this conference tournament, and obviously they should because they're playing San Jose State, they're going to have 20 wins. UNLV should win their game against Air Force, I would think, being the home team and having a little bit of that edge. That would give them 20 wins as well. San Diego State should who knows if San Diego State beats Fresno State, but still, they're a team very capable of having 20 wins here. So, you know, this is a pretty good conference top to bottom, and I agree with what you said that, you know, there probably should be two teams from this conference in the big dance, but it may take, you know, Nevada losing this conference tournament to get to that point. I do like the Boise State play here for a couple of reasons. One, as you mentioned, they are probably the best defensive team here in this league. Defense does travel. Obviously, they've got a little bit of extra incentive as a team that needs to win this thing to get in. But then also, you know, that first game against Utah State or Colorado State, not a particularly taxing game. I think they'll play Utah State. Colorado State's probably about ready to be done with this season with everything that's going on with that program. Utah State was 6-10 against everybody, not UNLV. So that's a pretty good draw for Boise State in that game. Then New Mexico, when they're away from the pit, they're not a particularly strong team. So, you know, I think Boise State's got a really good draw here. And then you walk into a situation, you know, where if Nevada gets knocked off, you've got a 3-1 favorite for the tournament in a favorite role in the conference championship game.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, some of the things I've been doing with some of these conference tournaments, I don't know if I'll necessarily do it here. It depends on if it plays out. But you want to get maybe one of those plus price teams kind of into the finals. And then that gives you room to, you know, play around a little bit and maybe hedge off or come back on the other side. That's what I end up getting fortunate to do with the Northeast tournament when I took LIU Brooklyn at 11-1. Now, I got fortunate that the 2 and 3 seeds got bounced. So that meant that LIU didn't have to play Wagner in the semifinals. They would only have to get them in the finals. But all of a sudden, LIU Brooklyn as the dog, and I bet them for the first half in the game too, they got out to a big lead. Well, it was only natural to lock in some plus, you know, just in case, because wacky things happen, to kind of take Wagner live money line at 2-1, and I actually probably could have got a better price, but waited a little too long. But where you kind of lock in a little bit here, I mean, if you're in like a conference tournament pool, and I know I'm in one, you know, it really doesn't pay to take all the one seeds, especially in like one bid leagues, because if you look over the past 5-6 years, even maybe a little further, at least double-digit teams every single year have one seeds that are the regular season champions that lose in the conference tournament and don't get NCAA bids. So, you know, it's not just going to be a sweep. You know, people will see the Gonzagas, who were the number one seed in the WCC and eventually won the tournament, and they'll see a couple of those, South Dakota State last night, and think that it's all one seeds winning these tournament, and it's really not.
Well, and a couple of things that we've talked about here, I know we talked about this last week, and this is a thing that keeps coming up, and obviously it's something that you've accounted for, but you got to pay attention to the schedules in these leagues here as well, where you've got, you know, in the quarterfinals on Thursday, Nevada plays probably UNLV, but the winner of that UNLV Air Force game at noon, Fresno and San Diego State play at 2:30. Then those teams, the winners of those two games, don't play until 6 o'clock on Friday night, whereas the teams in the other semifinal play at 6 and 8:30 respectively on Thursday, come back and play at 8:30 on Friday. Then you've got a mid-afternoon championship game on Saturday. So, you know, those are always considerations to look at. And I know that, you know, Wes, just to reinforce that point, I'm sure that's something you've been looking at from a derivative standpoint here thus far.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what you're seeing, because I think kind of the information is out there in terms of a playing championship game under. So a lot of these unders kind of get hammered, you know, so you really got to be on top of it when they open up because of the time differences and because playing three straight games, three straight days, or even more. So, I mean, you see these unders get hit, and maybe sometimes if the numbers get hit too much, maybe you can go with like a first half over, and that eventually gives that some value, where the game still may stay under, and, you know, where it got steamed under, and it may still stay under, but you can maybe sneak in a first half over and then see it slow down more in the second half. So when you're kind of looking at these totals.
All right, I know you're looking at Boise State here, and this will be the last question I ask you about the Mountain West, so I'll move over to the Pac-12. Any other betting angles that you're looking to play on here in this conference tournament?
Well, it's kind of standard across all conferences, not necessarily unique to the Mountain West. I mean, you sometimes, I think, want to look at that angle. That doesn't mean you blindly play it, but you look at that angle if a team's been swept in the regular season, that they, you know, a lot of times are going to have motivation to not get beat three times. And I think that that's actually a more pronounced edge when you look at the smaller conferences where the talent gap is not really very, very much, if any at all. Now, obviously here in the Mountain West, there's a talent gap between some of the top teams in San Jose State, who just won their first game in the conference last week. So that's not necessarily – you might not want to play that angle with somebody that's really bad like a San Jose State, but you're seeing some of these bottom feeding teams, especially kind of covering the first half. You just saw a couple in the SWAC yesterday. I mean, these are teams that are rated in the KenPom, you know, the bottom 10, 15 in the country. And, you know, and they end up covering the first halves. You saw Pittsburgh with Notre Dame yesterday, ended up only losing by 3 and they were 17 point dogs. So, maybe don't be so afraid to take these teams if you have to, these bottom feeders, because I think they're at least going to try to give an effort. But don't necessarily use that angle, and I wouldn't be using it with San Jose State here in this tournament.
All right, let's take a little drive west down Tropicana Avenue and wrap around and get to T-Mobile Arena here, where we've got the Pac-12 tournament. Arizona and Arizona State seem to be in the field. Arizona, the number one seed for this conference tournament. They'll be a high seed in the NCAA tournament. Arizona is the number 9 seed, and this is the only team right now per Lunardi outside of Arizona that seems to be guaranteed a spot in the tournament, but you've got a couple of very firm bubble teams there in USC and UCLA. The odds for this one here, looking at Arizona plus 167, USC 440, UCLA 625, Oregon 725, Utah and Arizona State 855, on down from there with the teams that really need a lot of things to go right for them to make a run in this one. So what are you looking at here with the Pac-12 conference tournament at T-Mobile Arena for just the second time?
Yeah, this is always kind of an interesting tournament, Adam. I mean, Arizona, I think, is the rightful favorite, and they're the best team in the conference. They're not the team that I bet, even though – you know, they're the team, if you've ever been to this tournament, they're the team that brings the most fans. They have the largest fan base. They sell the most tickets. So, you know, Arizona kind of turns Vegas a little bit into Tucson North, if you will. But I looked, and I actually took two futures, in this Pac-12 tournament, one on an opposite side of each draw, one on the top half, one on the bottom half. Top half team I took was Arizona State, who is the 9 seed, and I think I got them at about 8.75, maybe 9-1, somewhere around there. I took them because if they could get by Colorado, I'm not convinced that they're in, but I'm not convinced that they're out. I think they could use another win, and then I think if they can get to Arizona, who beat them twice, both in competitive games, and then if they can get by Arizona, who you don't really know how they are coming here, in here with all the emotion and all the controversy in terms of the alleged tape with Sean Miller, promising cash to land DeAndre Ayton. And DeAndre Ayton had missed a couple games. They just got Alonzo Trier back eligible. So they've had a lot of things going on in that program. So it is tough when you've had that much going on, even though they're the most talented and the best team in the conference, to really bet them, I think, in terms of if you're looking at the futures market. And I looked at Arizona State, and Arizona State in both games has not had an answer really for DeAndre Ayton. But I think they're going to be super motivated, assuming they get by Colorado today. They're going to be super motivated to not lose to Arizona three times. They haven't been really outclassed, but they've just kind of fallen short in both games. So you get Arizona State there, and they get by Arizona in that 1-9 game. I think this team could get to the final because looking at that 4-5 matchup, they actually, I think, match up really well with UCLA should they see UCLA in the semifinals. And also they've got some recency revenge because what kind of put them more on the bubble here was that loss at home to Stanford where they were about a double-digit favorite, and then they lost at home to kind of a mid-pack Stanford team, and then you had the narrative kind of come out, hey, this team started out such and such an O and, you know, beat Kansas and beat all these really good teams and beat Xavier and, you know, Kansas State. I mean, they had a lot of really good wins in the non-conference, but then they go 8-10 in the league. So people are like, hey, what's happened to this team? So this maybe is a little bit of a redemption story for Arizona State. And then going to the bottom, I did go with Oregon at +725, and they're the 6th seed. They're kind of on the bubble, but Oregon's had some nice success in this tournament. They made the final last year. They won this tournament before, I believe. And they also, I think, have the best coach in the conference with Dana Altman. So they're a team that really is good are good in these short turnarounds and, you know, really good in terms of game-specific planning on a short turnaround. And I think Dana Altman's the best in the league at that. And so that's why I went with Oregon. I mean, the ideal situation for me, obviously, would be to get both of those teams in the final with Arizona State and Oregon and then just kick back and relax and, you know, wait a couple hours to cash a ticket, you know, if it was only that easy. But, I think that could be a realistic chance of happening. There's not a ton of separation in this league this year. So you can see somebody a little bit off the radar like an Oregon or like an Arizona State get to the final here, and it wouldn't be the least bit shocking.
Yeah, I'll be rooting pretty hard for Oregon. I got a piece of them at 250-1 way earlier in the season. So I'm certainly hoping that the Ducks can make a run here in this conference tournament. And I will ask you about this, you know, because as you mentioned, there's really not a ton of separation beyond Arizona really in this conference. I mean, Arizona is the class of the league, but as you mentioned, lots of stuff going on with them. It was not a concern for you that Oregon and Arizona State have to play that extra game. So, you know, is it one of those things where because T-Mobile is a relatively new arena for these teams? I mean, I know that there have been some season games out there in the non-conference and then also this conference tournament, but still, you know, the sight lines are a little bit different. It's a different kind of atmosphere, stuff like that. Do you think it actually benefits those two teams to, you know, have to play that first round game?
I actually think it does. I mean, to kind of get used to it. And I had never been to it in that arena, but I had been to it in the old MGM Grand Garden, which was a lot smaller arena, and I think could get a little bit more louder just because the arena was smaller. And I mean, you had a lot, you had some really good crowds, specifically when Arizona playing. Also, Oregon is a sneaky good draw there, and as is Utah, who's used to traveling to Las Vegas for the when they were in the Mountain West all those years. I mean, they're kind of the three teams that I've seen that have consistently brought the most crowd support. And, you know, this is a little bit bigger of an arena. So, you know, there's the potential that you might have some empty seats in the T-Mobile. And I think you really will for, like, the games involving, like, Cal or Washington State. I mean, where you're going to see a fair amount of empty seats and maybe not as much interest. And then plus, you know, you have three tournaments going on in Las Vegas. You have the Mountain West, you have the Pac-12, and you have the WAC, which the WAC really doesn't draw. I mean, New Mexico State is really the only school that seems to bring at least a sizable contingent, but maybe Grand Canyon, GCU, as their brand kind of expands, can kind of add to that. But there's usually a lot of empty seats in New Orleans for the WAC tournament.
Well, good thoughts on today's show from Wes Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one Wes. I know it's a very, very hectic time of year for you. So thank you so much for taking some time out to join us. We'll talk to you again next week.
No problem, Adam. Always good rapping with you.
Good stuff there on today's show with Wes Reynolds. Again, follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Follow along. He's got those futures posted that he talked about. And then also obviously does a lot of derivative stuff here with these conference tournaments. One more guest for this week on Bang the Book Radio. Keep in mind, no shows on Thursday and Friday this week. That is Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thank you.
Good to get you back on the program here, and thank you for being flexible. I know that we had to move you from Thursday to Wednesday here, and we'll have Rolf joining us the next 2 weeks on Wednesday as well with March Madness, as long as nothing happens to get in the way there from a scheduling standpoint. But, you know, so far, so good for you during the conference tournaments?
Yeah, you know, it's gone as I expected, a good start for my customers. And, you know, there's just a lot of things you have to do differently in the conference tournaments. I mean, you know, teams react differently, lines makers make points differently, and you have to be able to adjust. And having handicapped it for as long as I have, I'm still learning on how to adjust things, but it's been a good season thus far.
Well, one thing I think has to help you, and I want to bring this point up again, and obviously this isn't something I expect our East Coast listeners to do just to improve their handicapping, but one of the things that you have talked about this year is that, you know, that move out there to Las Vegas, the ability to watch some of those late games has been really beneficial for you, and you've got, you know, two of those conference tournaments here in town that we just talked about in our previous segment, the Mountain West and the Pac-12, and, you know, I have to think that things like that, you know, really help you here at this time of the year, because it's a little bit of an uncertain market with the back-to-backs and with the different motivations for all these teams. You know, you've got a really good pulse on the market this year. So I think that, you know, that's something that you can also take big advantage of here at this time of the year as well.
You know, it is. You know, being in Cleveland, there's nothing like watching a tournament and getting the value from watching the tournament live. Now, the downside is if you're watching a tournament live, you're not able to watch the other games on TV. So I'm passing on actually watching, you know, the tournaments live here in town, because you can view so many more things on TV and get the flow of the games. I mean, it's so important when you're playing one day to the next to be tuned into how those games played. A recap or a box score just doesn't cut it from one day to the next when you're handicapping those games.
All right, we're going to hit on four conference tournaments here on today's show. A couple of them won't take a ton of time with the Big West and the Ivy, but we will wrap up with those. I want to start with the A-10 and the SEC here at the top of the segment, because both of them start tonight. The Big West starts tomorrow. The Ivy League starts on Saturday, as that's just a four-team tournament. So let's go to the A-10 first here. This one at Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C., first time at this venue. So when you hear something like that, Rolf, when you hear first time at a venue, do you start to get some preconceived notions about how things are going to go?
Yeah, well, my first thought is under the first few games. You know, we saw that happen in a couple of the tournaments. You know, the Big Ten especially playing at MSG this year, you know, you have different sight lines, you have different locker rooms, you have a different setting, you have teams in awe. Sometimes when you're playing in these NBA arenas, a lot of these kids, you know, especially in these smaller conferences, haven't really played in these bigger arenas. So, you know, even though they're superstars and even though you're playing for major programs, you know, these kids look up to their NBA stars. And when they're playing in that type of venue, it's something that does catch their eye. Again, I look to play the unders in those early, and a lot of times when you're looking at unders early in the conference tournaments, Vegas is just taking numbers based on the regular season performances. That's all they could do for the first games. But you have to remember, these coaches in these first games of these tournaments know that for them to be successful, they have to play 3 or 4 days. So you get different rotations. You may get an extra player or two. You know, you may get them pooling starters earlier than normal with the lead. So you don't quite get those same scoring averages that you do during the regular season. So new venue to me automatically means I'm looking at the under, not 100%, but it's usually my guide to start my handicapping.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here, too. You know, you've got a team like Rhode Island who people think about, you know, being this class of this conference. And, you know, I mean, realistically, they should be, but they have fallen on some hard times here. But still, even this team is a team that plays in a 7,700-seat venue. You know, obviously, Dayton is a pretty big place there on the UD campus with them. Having those play-in games early on in the tournament. So, you know, maybe the bigger venue is a little bit better for them than it would be for a team like Rhode Island. But, you know, you got Davidson that plays in a 5,300-seat barn. You know, so a lot of these teams really stepping up in terms of the size of the venue that they're playing in. And that has a correlation to looking at the futures market for this too, because if you're an offensive team, and we talked about this on Monday, when we talked about Conference USA and how ridiculous it is that they're going to have games running simultaneously in the first round and the quarterfinals there. Now, if you're an offensive minded team and you got to go play in one of these big venues or some place that you're not accustomed to, it is very hard to take a team like that in a futures market.
It is. And, you know, let me just point out one game for those people listening tonight. You know, I'll have George Washington on my card for this evening. You know, they're playing Wednesday at 8:30 at Fordham. They played Temple here in this arena earlier this year. Now, one game you may not think means a big deal, but when you're already playing in your hometown, in your home proximity, and you've played a game there, you've been there, you've done that, you walked through, you had a huge crowd, it's a huge edge for me, and that's enough to get me on George Washington for tonight.
All right, so let's look at the overall odds for this conference tournament. Rhode Island, the favorite, plus 162, but they have not played like a favorite in this conference for a while now. They had that embarrassing loss to St. Joe's. They've had some other problems along the way as well. Davidson, they're plus 290. St. Bonaventure, a team a lot of people will be talking about here this week, they're plus 350. We don't know for sure if they're in. It certainly looks like most projections have them comfortably into the tournament, but you know, it'd certainly benefit them to win a game or two here in this thing. Then you got aforementioned St. Joe's, about 13-1. VCU is 26-1. They're next on the board. St. Louis, 36. Dayton, 40. On down from there. So, you know, what are you looking at here out of the top three teams in this conference, Rolf?
Well, I think this is coming from the top three teams. This is very top heavy. And I'll tell you what, that'll be surprising for VCU fans. VCU has been to the final game of this tournament each of the last 5 years, and they won it 3 years ago. But you look at this tournament the last 4 years. Rhode Island won it last year as a 4 seed. St. Joe's won it in 2016 and 2014 as a 4 seed, and VCU won it as a 5 seed the year before. So each of the last, while I'm telling you I think it'll come from the top three teams, each of the last 4 years has been a number 4 or 5 seed. But, you know, in this conference, I'm a Davidson fan. When you look at Davidson, you know, they have the best offense as far as efficiency goes in the conference. They have the third best defense. They put it together with Axel Gunmanson, you know, a great sophomore player, and Patron Aldridge. You have two all-conference players on a team. I think that's a huge edge. You know, and when you have Rhode Island, up until you know, the mid-February, people thought Rhode Island was going to blow through the conference, go undefeated, go 26-3. You had the St. Bonaventure loss on the road. And then, as you said, that St. Joe's loss and then the loss to Davidson the last two games, there's times when a team is so good and they just pull the reins down a little bit, it's tough to get back to that same playing level. And I think that's exactly the case with Rhode Island. You know, we talked about those last 5 games. Well, yes, they crushed Dayton at home, but they also went to LaSalle and only won by 2 in overtime. So in your 4 games, you had 1 overtime win and 3 losses. You got a team that probably thinks they're in. Yes, they're in. You have players that think they're in. It's hard for them to all of a sudden become motivated and now play in the tournament game. So I would certainly not play on Rhode Island, you know, and perhaps VCU and HC does come out of there if they knock off Dayton and then can beat Rhode Island. But I like Davidson, the 3 seed, to knock off Bonnie and to advance and win this tournament.
Well, and Davidson's been a popular pick here on the show, and I imagine that they're a popular pick out there in the Twitterverse as well. And this is one that the bubble teams are going to be watching very, very closely, because you have to wonder, I mean, if Bonaventure gets to the semifinal game here, if they knock off the team that they play between Richmond and Duquesne, as they should, you know, winning a game in the conference tournament, generally something that makes you pretty safe for the NCAA tournament. But if they do lose to Davidson in that semifinal game on Saturday, Davidson goes on to the championship, possibly wins it. Does that take away St. Bonaventure's at-large berth? Does it take away one from somebody else on the bubble? It's going to be very, very interesting to watch with this conference here. But, you know, Rolf, I have to ask. I mean, does Rhode Island get to the title game then, or does somebody trip them up on the way there?
Well, you know, it really is going to depend. Like I said, VCU has the pedigree. They don't have the season this year that they're accustomed to at 17-14 and 9-9 in conference play, you know, and they have no good wins. So while I have the pedigree and I'd like to say they'd be there, you look at the teams they've beaten in the conference, all the teams are the lower level teams, you know, and even the St. Louis team is the highest rated team they beat, and that was in overtime. So I don't think VCU gets there. You know, I'd like to say I'd get there. I put a few pennies on him just as the long shot, but it's I think Rhode Island gets there because they match up well with both VCU and Dayton. Both of those teams are playing the second straight game. You know, it's going to be a St. Joe's game where Rhode Island's going to be about a 4-point favorite. And if St. Joe's can get by Mason without much pressure, I think St. Joe's can knock off Rhode Island. So let me go ahead and call it here. And I'm going to call for the 3-seed Davidson to play the 4-seed St. Joe's in the finals, and then the Davidson to advance.
Well, that would certainly make for a very interesting tournament from a futures standpoint, with St. Joe's a little better than 13-1, VCU 26-1 out there. You know, so we'll see if Rhode Island is a little bit vulnerable in either one of those games. But it sounds like the Hawks, you know, maybe a team out there at 13-1 that could have a little bit of value. One other thing I want to point out here, this probably doesn't have that much of an impact. Davidson has a very quick turnaround Friday to Saturday. They play at 8:30 and then play at 3:30 on Saturday if they advance to that point. But then you've got the daylight savings time change on Sunday. So you spring ahead, extra hour of daylight, one less hour of sleep for those of us that desperately need it here at this time of the year. So that is something that's kind of a quirk. Like I said, I don't think it matters too much for the conference tournament, especially with regards to the fact that, you know, it's a championship game. So both teams are going to be highly motivated, highly focused, highly ready to go. But, you know, just for your sake here, to make sure that you're up and active and know what's going on, don't forget to set that clock ahead a little bit on Sunday morning. So Rolf, let's move away from the A-10. Let's go to the SEC here. And this is a very interesting tournament this year, because not only do we have the strongest SEC conference we've had in a while, we also have a new venue in the Scott Trade Center as this one moves away from Nashville.
Yeah, you know, let me ask a question. The SEC is a conference in the South, right? The ACC is a conference in the South. So where would they have their championship games? Just as expected, New York City and St. Louis. So, you know, being in St. Louis is a huge edge for obviously Arkansas. Missouri would be the biggest edge, but you know, Kentucky's 330 miles, and when you have Kentucky within a drive, you know you're going to have the city blanketed in Kentucky blue. So, you know, those three teams certainly get the boost with the home edge in this tournament.
Yeah, they really do. And that'll be something that's very interesting to watch here, because you've got a Kentucky team in that 4-5 matchup. They would probably wind up playing Missouri in the quarterfinals. So that should be a very raucous, very entertaining environment there. But, you know, Kentucky is a team that is supposed to be really, really good. They've had some problems here this year. Missouri, kind of a team that's, you know, been rising late in the season. Then the announcement that Michael Porter Jr. would probably be coming back, you know, that kind of propped them up a little bit. But man, as far as I'm concerned, I look at Florida, and Florida's the team I like here in this league.
Well, I actually like the 4 seed. I like Kentucky. I like the been there and done that. Now, I'm also the same person that liked Kentucky as a best bet going into Florida last week. And Florida handed it to them. Florida went through that spell where they lost two or three games, and then they finished strong, beating Bama, Auburn, and Kentucky. So, you know, as far as momentum goes, clearly it's in Florida's ball game. But, you know, you talk about Missouri, and I just want to give a shout-out to Quanzo Martin, the first-year head coach. You know, Missouri, think about their season. Martin, for those that don't know, coached at Tennessee for 3 years, then coached at Cal, and he took over a Missouri team that was 8-24. He had the third biggest improvement this year in college basketball. North Carolina AT&T went from 3-29 to 19-3. UC Santa Barbara went from 6-22 to 22-8. And Missouri went 8-24 last year. They're 20-5 this year. They're the number 5 seed in the SEC. They suspended their starting point guard who started the first 19 games, Terrence Phillips. He hasn't played since. They lose their number 1 player who potentially could have been a number 1 player in the draft, Michael Porter, after 2 minutes, and he has him at 20-11 and a number 5 seed in the SEC. So, you know, if people looked at who did the best job coaching with the players he had, finishing the season going 6-3 or 8-3, it would be Martin for me as my coach of the year.
And that's so interesting too, because Quanzo Martin is a guy that, you know, he kind of rose through the ranks a little bit, did a fairly decent job at Tennessee, and then went out to Cal, and he had a lot of talent at Cal, and Cal just never lived up to the hype, and people really started to get a negative opinion of Quanzo Martin. Now he takes this Missouri team and, you know, kind of puts them into a pretty good position here as they head into the conference tournament. So a very interesting one to be sure, and I'm glad that you pointed that name out here. So we've got Auburn as the favorite for this conference tournament, and Bruce Pearl's done a fantastic job with the Tigers. They're plus 320, Florida plus 393, Tennessee 410, Kentucky 520, A&M 1075 as the 9 seed, Missouri, or as the 8 seed, excuse me, Missouri 1350, Arkansas 1475, Alabama 28, on down from there. So, you know, what do you think about this league overall? I know you said that you like Kentucky and you gave some props to Quanzo Martin there. What about the rest of the teams here that are kind of vying for, you know, seeding upgrades or, you know, in the case of a bubble team like a Mississippi State, you know, actually getting into the tournament?
Well, you know, I think you already have, you have 7 locks. You have Auburn, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, you know, and I think Arkansas, A&M, and Missouri are in because of the way the SEC's played this year. So your bubble teams are Alabama, Mississippi State, you know, and to me, when you get into this tournament, the SEC tournament doesn't get, I mean, the SEC doesn't get as much love as a lot of the other conferences because it's been Kentucky dominated for so much. And, you know, you've had a few Florida, South Carolina defensive teams pop up there, but you know, this SEC tournament is brutal. And to get through this tournament, I think you just have to be a strong defensive team. So I don't like the number 1 seed Auburn. I don't like that a taller team can take advantage of them. They don't have much height. You know, they're new to this situation. You know, Florida obviously comes in as the favorite. But to me, you know, I put my money all on one side, and I did 2 futures, both on Kentucky and I said as Missouri. They'll end up playing each other, and I don't like doing that, but I think there's just enough value on both teams. You have a Kentucky team that's won this each of the last 3 years, and unlike the Atlantic 10, the number 1 seed has won this tournament 3 of the last 4 years, Kentucky being twice in the last 3 years and then Florida 4 years ago. So Chalk has been the runner-up. A lot of that has been, though, that Kentucky has had such a following where they've played in the South. But, you know, Auburn, again, Auburn to me can be a little one-dimensional where I am not a fan of what they're doing. Kentucky, I'm normally not a fan of the way they've played defense on the season as a whole, but I see their progression with a very young team and what they've done down the stretch. The Florida loss aside, I think Kentucky comes out of it. If not, you know, Bama to me can make a run. Bama is a team that played great defense the first part of the year, played horrible defense down the stretch. They made some adjustments. Colin Sexton, they tried moving him around and playing him a little differently than they did. They're going to return to what they got to in the finals. And, you know, Colin Sexton is a freshman. I don't like depending on a freshman to take a last-second shot in a close game, but he's shown himself to be a special player. You know, and then, you know, Tennessee is just a solid team. Tennessee is the only team that is top four in both offensive and defensive efficiency in the SEC. So they're always a live team. But, you know, again, with that being said, I'm going to stick with my Wildcats and go. And I think they're the third or fourth favorite in this conference. And I'm going to ride them the whole way through and just put my money on them.
Let's spend a couple more minutes on the Volunteers here for a second, because by the time we rejoin our listeners here on the air on Monday, the bracket will already be out. Opening lines will be out. People will be starting to figure some of these things out. So let's spend a couple of minutes talking about Tennessee, because no one's really talking about them in this conference tournament. A lot of focus on Kentucky. Auburn's the number one seed. Missouri, kind of the de facto home team, although, as you mentioned, Big Blue Nation will travel quite a bit. People talking a lot about Florida, who knocked off Kentucky in that regular season finale game. Nobody's talking about Rick Barnes's team. And I know Kyle Hunter and I have kicked Rick Barnes around dating back to his Texas days quite a bit. What are the Volunteers? I mean, like I said, no one's talking about them here. They're a top five team in defensive efficiency. They're a top 50 team in offense. So, you know, they're not inept on that side of the ball by any means. You know, what is the actual ceiling for this team?
Well, you know, you look at what Barnes has done, you know, while he may have been kicked around at Texas, to me, I certainly can't kick him around to Tennessee, because he's done the right thing the way I'm looking at it. He came in and he was 6-12 in conference play, going 15-9 his first year. He's in his third season now. His next year, he improved to 8-10 in conference play and got him to 16-16. This year, 13-5 in conference play, 23-7. So three straight progressions of 6, 8, and 13 wins in conference plays, three straight years of progression overall, going 15, 16, and 23. And to me, that's the buy sign. When I have a head coach that has shown improvement each year and now has his players that he's recruited, you know, it's a big boost. It's a young team. His top five players are four sophomores and a junior. So that puts it at, you don't know how high your ceiling is. You have that young of a team playing well together. You know, that 13-5 in conference play, they lost their first two games against Arkansas and Auburn. And then since that time, they've gone 13-3. They've done what you should do. Besides that home loss to Auburn back on January 2nd, there are three other conference losses: to Missouri by four, to Alabama when Alabama was just on a killer run, and then the Georgia shut them down on the defensive end back on February 17th. But you've won four straight games. You beat Florida, both the Mississippis and Georgia. You're on a run where you've gone 11-2. You have a very young team. Well, you know, it's not quite the Fab Five of Michigan from years ago, but it's that type of ceiling. You don't know how far you can go because you have that much youth, which means if the kids get hot, play with confidence, you know, Tennessee is the number two seed. So South Carolina, Ole Miss winner. They're going to play the Mississippi State LSU winner, the 7-10 seed. You know, and both of those teams, they match up very well with them. And then that gets them to Florida or perhaps Arkansas if Florida doesn't get by. So, you know, if they get through this, let's put a Fab Five title on them. You know, they're not freshmen, but they're sophomores and underclassmen. And that's why it's tough to know what the ceiling is, because the ceiling is unlimited, but can they get to that potential with the youth?
Last thing here on the SEC, as we look ahead to Selection Sunday and see where these teams are going to be slotted. And of course, right now, Lenardi's got eight of the SEC teams in, as Brad Powers told us on yesterday's edition of Bangin' Book Radio. They haven't had more than six in the tournament any other year. So this is the strongest year for the SEC. Eight from the Big 12, eight from the ACC as well would currently be in. There are some bubble teams in both of those leagues, though. So the question here, Rolf, that I've got for you is, as we're looking ahead to Sunday, as we're looking ahead to the completion of these brackets, we start to find out who's playing who and where they're going to do it. What do you think the perception is of the SEC going into the NCAA tournament? I mean, is this a conference where you know, people are going to take these teams to make some deep runs. This is a conference where, you know, people are going to say, well, you know, this hasn't been a great conference in the past, so, you know, I'm going to be very cautious with them. But what are you looking to do as you, you know, start to fill out a bracket and maybe, you know, look at some of the betting odds that are out there for the SEC?
Well, I think Florida and South Carolina last year, both making a deep run, changed that perception. So, you know, it was a conference that hasn't had a lot of people. That's what we talked about. Now it's been Kentucky and the other teams. But now with Florida being there, South Carolina making the run and losing to Florida last year, you know, in a great game, I think now the people know that the SEC is a legitimate conference, that those top defensive teams do beat each other up, and when they're playing a non-conference opponent, they can make a run. So last year clearly gives them a different perception for this year.
All right, let's move out to the Big West Conference Tournament then. This one actually starts here on Thursday night, and this one is kind of hard for us to talk about because one of the unique elements about this conference tournament is that after the first round games, it reseeds. So if you're a number one seed and there's an upset in the first round, that's a fantastic thing for you. UC Santa Barbara, who is the two seed here, they are the favorite, plus 238. UC Davis, plus 320. Irvine, also plus 320. Fullerton, plus 715. Hawaii and Long Beach State, a little bit better than 10-1. And then nobody giving Cal Poly or UC Riverside a shot here in this one at the Honda Center. So walk us through what you're looking at here with the Big West.
Well, you know, Santa Barbara, as we said, is an amazing team. They went from 6-22 to 22-8. And to me, that scares me. You know, Joe Pasternak, again, a first-year head coach. He was an assistant for a few years. He was a head coach back at New Orleans 2008 to 2010. You want to talk about Coach of the Year honors. Again, they're never going to get mentioned playing Santa Barbara. But again, he took over a 6-win team, and he has them at 22-8. Santa Barbara also has two players listed on the Big West All-Conference. When they voted the All-Conference team, they actually voted six players. And Santa Barbara, both with Max Heidegger and Leland King, are All-Conference players. So to have multiple All-Conference guys lead your program, I'm a fan. First-year head coach having made a big jump up, I'm not a fan of backing them to win this tournament. I'm actually going to be on Irvine in this tournament. You know, I like the matchup with Irvine. They'll be one of my best bets most likely on Thursday. They'll play Hawaii. Hawaii actually has been on the mainland since February 27th. Hawaii came to play their last two regular season games on the road, and then it cost them less to stay here for the conference tournament than it would be to fly back and return. So to me, that's tough. You're living out of a hotel. Yes, your team is bonding, but your team also is probably driving itself crazy being with each other 24/7 for, you know, a period of a week and a half. You know, and Irvine lost at home to Hawaii. So I get them going by the first round. They also clearly have the best defense in the conference. And again, I'm a big defensive fan. Their offense can be slowed down. Their four losses this year came when they only scored 62 points or less. But then, you know, they would have won the conference. They lost their final regular season game to UC Davis in double overtime, or else Irvine would have been the conference winner. Now we have them as the three seed, and I think we're getting value because of that. Again, a lot of times the odds are made because of the seedings, and our listeners have to realize the seedings don't mean that much. The seeding is what happened for the entire season, not how the teams have played late. You know, I'm going to go off on a tangent here talking about the NCAA tournament and how much time people waste. Who's going to be a 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed? What does it matter? You're coming out of the same bracket. You have to win every other game. You don't get any buys. You don't get any extra time to prep. You don't get any points taken off or have to score fewer points to win the game. So to me, being the 1-4 seed is irrelevant. You have to win those games to get to the finals. The same thing here. I think if they had won that game, they would have been the 1 seed. They would have been the favorite to win this division. So one, now we have a fired-up team that has revenge against Davis if they're going to play him for a double overtime home loss with the best defense in the conference and the experience of having been there and done that. Last year, you know, looking back at the last 4 years, UC Davis won this tournament last year as the number two seed. Hawaii was the number one seed 2 years ago when they had the great team, and they won it. Irvine won it 3 years ago as the three seed, and Cal Poly won it 4 years ago as the number seven seed. So a little recap of history there, but Irvine lost in the finals last year. Irvine won it 3 years ago, and I'm going to be an Irvine fan for this week. Go Anteaters.
And the thing about the Anteaters here, too, I mean, look, they're not a great offensive team. But that being said, they're the best defensive team in this league, as you mentioned. And one of the things that we've talked about with regards to Honda Center here on the show is that this is a great venue for unders, because these are teams that play generally in very small arenas. Now they go and play in this massive 20,000-seat hockey arena. If you're a good defensive team and you're playing in a spot like this with a tournament that's probably going to be pretty sparsely attended, I would think, then you certainly have the upper hand by being able to play defense. So I think that you're definitely on the right track there with Irvine. So I guess we got one more conference tournament to take a look at here. That is the Ivy League, just the second year of the Ivy League conference tournament. It begins Saturday night at the Palestra on the campus of the University of Pennsylvania. Penn is the number two seed because they lost one of their games to Yale. Harvard and Penn split during the regular season. Harvard swept with Yale. Penn did not. So Harvard gets the number one seed here. They have the easier first-round game in Cornell, but I think the tournament final here is pretty cut and dry, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I was looking to back Yale. I would have picked Yale to win this all if Mekhi Mason would have played. For those that don't know, Mason was the player 2 years ago when Yale knocked off Baylor. He had 31 points in the NCAA tournament. He broke his foot. He missed each of the last 2 years. He came back last week or 2 weeks ago to play one game against Harvard, got injured in that game again, and they're just going to sit him out. By the way, Mason already is going to be a graduate next year, and he already has announced he's going to go play for Baylor, the team he beat in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago. So that's a huge boost for Baylor, the Baylor Bears next year. But had he played, he's that type of an impact player. Had he been healthy, then I would have picked Yale. I think you look at this team, you have Penn is the number two efficiency on offense, the number two on defense. Harvard is number three on offense, number one on defense. But I'm actually a fan of Penn. I think Penn comes out of this, and I think Penn wins it. I think the loss to Harvard on the road was a 9-point loss. They beat Harvard at home only 74-71 three games ago, and then they did lose to Yale on the road. But, you know, that Yale loss on the road by a point came after that win against Harvard, so you can understand that. I think Yale comes in playing better. Yale's a deeper team. They have five or six players that rotate into three positions, into the forwards and the centers. Gives them much more depth. It's only a two-game series. Depth isn't that important. But they have more scores against an elite defense than Harvard does, and I think Yale comes away with this.
So if those two meet in the championship game on Sunday, Harvard and Penn, what's your line, considering that this one's at the Palestra, so Penn is the home team despite being the lower seed?
I think Penn will be two. You know, the Palestra is you have a situation where it's a one-game win all. The home edge is going to be deflated a little bit. While Penn's going to pick up their extra certificates, Harvard's going to bring their fans. And I figure two, maybe three. I like Penn. If the line happens to be anything over a point, over a basket, though, and it gets to be two, three, or four, it's certainly something I would then change my mind and say, well, I pick Penn to win. If it's four or more, I start looking to bet Harvard with, you know, a game that I'm going to anticipate, first one to 65 wins, a lower scoring game. Total, I expect to be about 137, 138. And again, if the points are a premium, I'll grab them.
Well, and the reason I bring that up, and this is something I talked about with Kyle Hunter last night when we touched on the Ivy, is you can get Penn right now at minus 110 out there at BetOnline. I think it's minus 118 at five dimes. Harvard is plus 175 at BetOnline, or you can get them plus 183 at five dimes. Both of those are better prices than you would see in the championship game. Penn is not going to be a pick 'em in this game, so that minus 110 You got some value on the Quakers there. Harvard is not going to be as big as a plus 175 underdog in that title game. They're not going to lose to Cornell either. At least they shouldn't. So I think if you take both of those plays here, Penn and Harvard, you're getting some line value out there in the marketplace. So I think that's one of the things that you want to look for, because you can get Penn at minus 110, Harvard at plus 180. You set yourself up really nicely there for two lines that are better than you would get when these two teams face off.
You know, great point, Adam. For those that are shopping, basically you bet both of them now. If Harvard wins, you're plus 70 cents. If Yale wins, you're minus 10 cents. So you're looking at basically a middle there, which for those that have the ability to do that is a great way to look at this tournament. Congrats to you, Adam. That's a great point.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's nice to be commended by somebody who's having such a great college basketball season. I know we've had some listeners that have reached out about the successes that you've had so far this year, Rolf, and I certainly hope you keep them going here through these last conference tournaments and, of course, on into March Madness and the other tournaments as well, which we will make sure to talk about, CBI, CIT, NIT. There's a lot more value in those than there is in March Madness. They're not nearly as exciting, but you're going to find a lot more betting value in those smaller postseason tournaments. So, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com, what's going on over there right now, man?
You know what, Adam? I just want to bring up one point about the NFL here and go completely off topic. I was going to the Orange County Register to read about the Big West tournament to see if they had any previews in there today, and something caught my eye talking about the ticket prices at the new Inglewood Stadium for the Chargers and the Rams. While none of our listeners probably can afford this, I'm only talking to you personally, Adam, in case you're interested. If you want a PSL for the Chargers when they open at Inglewood, it's only $75,000 a year. The Rams are only $100,000 if you want tickets on the 50-yard line. So, again, I know it's a moot point for our listeners, but for you personally, Adam, I know you'll probably scoop up PSLs for both teams.
That's pocket change for me, man. I can open up my wallet right now, and I'm good to go on that price. So, yeah, absolutely. It was funny. I was talking with a joint friend of ours, Brian Leonard, about the PSLs for the stadium there in Las Vegas. And I thought that was kind of steep, but sure as hell isn't six figures steep.
Yeah. Well, the Cowboys was 150 for the primo, for the 500 primo seats. It was 150. And these are for the top primo seats, but all kidding aside, I want to reiterate one point. Since we'll be talking on Wednesday, we'll have missed some of the value next week. I say to my customers, there's only two times when you're betting sports, when you could bet on a team that wants to win a game against a team that doesn't care to be there. That's NFL preseason football, and that's NIT basketball. Many times you have disappointed teams that don't care to be there against a team that is thrilled. There's more value in the NIT, you said it, than the NCAA tournament tenfold. Don't overlook those games. Do your reading on the local papers. Find out what teams wanted to be there, what teams are just doing it as a concession for the extra practices, and make sure you take advantage of those games.
Well, of course, unfortunately, we won't have you until Wednesday, but people can follow you on Twitter at CalSportsLV. And then what can they also get from you over at Wager Talk?
We're going to do a March Madness guide. We have the NBA stat sheet that goes up daily, and we'll be doing a few things for the March Madness. So keep checking out Wager Talk at a college basketball news, and check it out next Monday after the tournament seedings are picked. Also, if anyone wants my bracket, I've had the national championship two of the last 4 years, the actual matchups. I'll send out my bracket free to anyone. They just got to shoot me an email, calsports@aol.com. I'll shoot up my bracket to them free next Monday.
And again, as I said, you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, appreciate your time. Thank you for your flexibility here. I know we got to move things around a little bit over these next 3 weeks, but I'm really looking forward to it, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Talk to you, Adam. Thank you.
Insightful stuff there, as always, from Rolf Michaels of WagerTalk.com. Love having him on the program. He's been a fantastic resource for us with college basketball. I certainly expect more of the same here over the remainder of the season. I know he does as well. So no shows coming up on Thursday and Friday, but we did four shows in 3 days for you, so I think we did a pretty good job with that. We'll be back on the air again on Monday with a new edition of the Monday Mailbag. So please make sure that you send that out to me. I'll also talk about my bracket coming up here at some point whenever I get one filled out. Then we'll also have Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com joining us. for another edition of Handicapping the Hardwood. Typically what I like to do with the guests on March Madness week is I'll give them a region and say, you know, I want to go deeper into this. And then at that point, we can start looking at, you know, how things may shake out going into the round of 32 over the weekend. We can throw out some projected lines, stuff like that. So that's what we'll do next week because, you know, obviously without shows on Thursday and Friday, you know, we won't be able to update things for Saturday and Sunday. So that's what I tend to do. I like to give my guests a region. We'll try to talk about all of them, you know, on the shows here. With Kyle, we'll do more of an overview, kind of look at maybe some of those Sweet 16 futures, stuff like that. But, you know, and I try to cover everything. And then especially once we get to the Sweet 16, you know, we can project out some Elite Eight matchups, stuff like that. And, of course, talk about those other postseason tournaments as well. But keep it tuned to bangthebook.com. We got lots of great stuff going on over there as well. And once the brackets are announced, I'm sure we'll have a lot more. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again on Monday.